go from there. Trevante Jaramillo. It is Wednesday, February 26th. Not gonna lie to you people, it's been a weird day. Some stuff in my life kind of changed a little bit. It's all for the good. It's all you know, it's all nice. It's just something that I'm not gonna totally get into, which is, I know is awesome radio. Mention something that is kind of a big deal in your life, but don't actually talk about it and let people in on it. Not yet, folks, but kind of a weird day. But I did have some also good news, which again I'm not going to talk about because that might come out later tonight, actually. So the show today, the center, the core is going to be, you know, family and in turn adoption. The man I'm speaking with has a pretty sizable family. Four kids, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, four kids. And apparently I missed the entire story. And what we're trying to get to here is we got a lot of friends on Twitter. We got a lot of people around us. And, like, apparently there's a pretty good yarn that is to be told about this man's family. I'm here with Sloan Phillips. And if you're on Twitter, he's at VA Gamecock. He's a Virginia man, and we're happy to have you, man. Thank you for doing this.
No, thank you, sir.
Here's the thing. Apparently, like, I had to take a break from tweeting the show just because I didn't have a way to listen to it during the day, and apparently some, like, major stuff happened with you and your family. Can you kind of, like, even if it's possible, like, go start to finish, like, what was the reason that you guys decided to adopt? Was it like a you guys couldn't have kids issue? Like, I know zero about your story. All I know is you have kids and you got them from somewhere. So,
yeah, Trevante, I can take you through, I mean, a brief overview. We have three adopted children, one biological child. Henry, our biological child, was born first, so he's the oldest. Then we have Grace, who we adopted domestically. And then we have Molly and Charlie, who we adopted internationally. So I guess to start, we got Henry through in vitro fertilization. So we had some fertility issues on both sides, myself and my wife, that made natural pregnancy difficult, so we went through the IVF process. And when Elizabeth was 23 weeks pregnant with Henry, she went into preterm labor. So we put her in the hospital for 11 weeks. And Henry was born, I think, 6 weeks premature. We made it to 35 weeks in a day, something crazy. But, I mean, you can tell that he's premature looking at him. He's a strapping young man, close to age seven. And so when we went back to, you know, further grow our family, we're like, okay, well, we can do IVF again, but we're going to have to put my wife either on very strict bed rest at home or in the hospital with an infant that's not really conducive. So we tried another IVF transfer and it didn't take. And it was about 2 or 3 days into it not taking, we were like, well, why don't we just adopt? So we started that process, and when we adopted Grace, we're actually in Virginia, the agency that we went with for domestic adoption, which is different than international, which I'll touch on in a minute, birth mothers pick the couple. So it's not really the other way around. And we were picked by a birth mother who had given birth to a little girl named Kamaya. And we met the birth mother, we met the baby, who was about 6 days old. Beautiful little girl, and African-American. And so, you know, we were on track and everything was good, but in Virginia, birth mothers have 10 days to change their mind. And on day 9, we got a call from our agency. And I remember I was sitting in our family room, and Elizabeth, my wife, took the call in the kitchen, which I could see into the kitchen from where I was. And I just, she said, "Oh, it's the agency. Let me grab this." And I just knew that something was wrong. And she picked up the phone, and about 20 seconds later, she dropped onto the floor and was crying uncontrollably. So I jumped up. I grabbed her. I put her on the couch. I grabbed the phone, and, you know, I asked the lady, I said, you know, what's going on? And she told me, so I started crying. Elizabeth's crying. The lady on the phone's crying. You know, we had stuff monogrammed. We had put stuff on Facebook. We had, you know, painted the little girl's room. I mean, everything was in place, and the birth mother, which is her right, and we will always thank her for choosing life for her child instead of the other option. But we were just devastated. But during that same call, the agency said, "Well, there's another little girl," and I just stopped her and I said, "Look, I can't. We've got to grieve. We've got to tell our family. We got to just, it's too much." And she said, "Well, this little girl's been passed over 2 times because she was born to an HIV positive mother, and she was also born addicted to narcotics." So I just instantly, when I heard that, myself, a former, well, I'll never not be an addict. I've been clean for close to 19 years, but I just instantly thought, Trevante, that this little girl didn't have a choice in whether or not she was going to be an addict because her birth mother chose to do drugs. I had a choice when I was 19, and I made the wrong choice. So I instantly was like, okay, send us a picture. Let me just see what this little girl looks like. And
I don't know why.
It was just one of those things that was like, I need to look. I need to see this girl's face. I need to see her on my phone. I mean, right. I just, and I looked at her, and Elizabeth is still on the couch in the family room crying hysterically. And, I looked at her and I said, you know, this is our daughter. And I went to Elizabeth and I said, we're going to go meet this girl. And she was born at UVA Hospital in Charlottesville. We were living in Richmond at the time, about an hour and a half away. So we're going to go meet her tomorrow. And she's like, no, I don't want to. I was like, well, I'm going. And you can come if you want to.
Now, let me stop you real quick. So I have a question.
Yes.
Yes, sir. You already had, you know, a biological child, and this is coming from, this is very child question, okay? This is me, you know, I don't have kids, I don't have a wife, you know, none of this stuff. I don't really understand, like, the feelings, obviously. Why why was it so important, like the fact that she, like, collapsed to the ground is bizarre to me. Like, why was it so important to adopt this child?
Well, because, I mean, we had held this little girl, Kamaya, in our arms. We had named her. She was going to be named Emma Sloan. And we had loved her and accepted her as our daughter. And when that was taken away, it was just devastating. It was like losing children that we had lost when we were doing in vitro fertilization. Like, twice Elizabeth had been pregnant for about a week and a half, and we ended up losing those transfers. But, it was still, to us, that was our daughter. And to have that taken away, it was like, okay, well, what is God trying to tell us? And that's kind of where we're coming at this from, is that we're instructed to, you know, care for widows and orphans. And when I saw the picture of Grace, I said, not only because of my past addiction, but, you know, this is our daughter, and we need to go, because she'd already been passed over by 2 families, and she was going to end up in the foster care system, where she could have been adopted by a wonderful family, or she could have bounced around from home to home until she was 18.
Okay, I have two other questions from that. What was your issue?
what was my issue with what?
Like your addiction. What happened?
I was addicted to cocaine and heroin.
What?
For 3 solid years.
Those are 2 of the big ones. How did that happen?
Yeah. Well, let's see. I was 2,700 miles away from home for the first time, and I had a really good job while I was in college working for a catering company, and I just got into the party scene and stayed there for 3 solid years. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy because, like, I mean, there's very few people that say, you know, I got deep into the party scene with coke and heroin that are here to tell about it still, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, Trevante, I know a lot of people that aren't with us anymore because it wasn't necessarily me that gave them their first taste, but I didn't stop them from partying. So, and I'll carry
you
that.
You don't hold on to that, though, do you? I mean,
to my grip. Well, I've got some family members that have struggled with addiction, and that was another reason for me reaching out personally to Grace and saying, you know, I want to take this child as my own because she didn't have a choice.
Right.
And so, you know, it became, you know, so I called the nurses at the hospital and I said, you know, we want to meet this baby. It's like, oh, well, you don't want to adopt this girl. We don't know what her meds should be right now. She's crying all the time. She doesn't eat. She doesn't sleep. And I said, well, we're going to come tomorrow, you know, like 12 o'clock, whatever it was. And so we went there and we went into the NICU, which Henry was in for about a week after he was born because he was born premature. And so we were used to all the bells and buzzers and, you know, lights and stuff. And they handed Grace to Elizabeth and she held her and Grace immediately calmed down. And the nurse was like, I've never seen her react like this. Let's get a bottle. And we fed her a bottle and she fell asleep and she slept for about 6 hours, which is very, you know, unusual for a newborn.
Sure.
But the nurse looked at us and she was just like, I don't understand what's going on. And I said, well, I think this little girl is calm because she's in the arms of her mother. And she knows that she's safe. And she knows that she's loved. And she knows that she will never be cast aside or put down or not be part of a family. And the nurse said, well, what about the HIV? What about the drugs? I said, we can get through that, but we need to let her know that she's part of a family. And so, you know, fortunately she was born C-section. She wasn't nursed. So, you know, the AZT helped and she subsequently has always tested negative. And then we were able to wean her off of the narcotics after about 3 months, which was very difficult because I went cold turkey myself, and I was holding Grace in between what I would just say fixes, because we were giving her certain amounts at certain times, and then we would decrease the dosage but increase the time in between dosages, so she would shake, almost like vibrate, because she was so tiny.
Right.
Not really crying, but just in
sick.
And I would hold her, and it was just, you know, she was jonesing.
Yeah, she's sick.
Perfect.
What do you know about, like, once you go through the process of like weaning her off the narcotics? Like, is that always like a thing? Like, if, you know, let's just say, for some reason, when she's a teenager or whatever, somebody gives her a Vicodin, is it going to throw her back? Like, does it stick with you even like when that happens? I know zero about that also.
Yeah, I mean, like, the doctors that we've talked to, Trevante, has said that she will probably have like lean more towards like ADHD or ADD, and have an addictive personality just because of that. So when she gets old enough, you know, we'll talk to her about her early years and try to steer her in the right direction or, you know, a better direction. But yeah, I mean, that'll be something, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, I will always be an addict, and I always will be, but I've been clean for a little over 19 years, and I have no desire ever to do those drugs again. So I think when we have those conversations with Grace, it will be, this is what happened to you before you were born, and this is how we need you to kind of behave or steer clear of these situations, you know, things like that, because you do have this in you chemically, you know, and we can just hope and pray for the best. So,
I was curious about, it just got me thinking, like, I mean, obviously a lot of this, this subject can take you down a lot of different roads. And one of the things that I kind of thought about, which I wasn't aware that you had a domestic adoption. How does that really work? Is it like how does a baby get into the domestic adoption portion of things? And like here, like I, obviously in Africa, there's all these, or not Africa, excuse me, internationally. I don't know why I just picked Africa. That was stupid, but internationally, there's,
well, that's where my other two kids are from. So we can talk about that too. So.
Okay, no, but I meant to say, you know, abroad. You know, like obviously there's agencies and there's, you know, there's at risk kids, but like, I guess the way I started thinking about it was like, you know, kids in bad neighborhoods and like, but I was already thinking older, not necessarily, you know, infants or, you know, really small children, like. What's the actual domestic scene like?
Well, it can be, I mean, it varies. You can have, like, we went with a private agency that has birth mothers that have either given birth or are pregnant, and they know that they can't take care of the child when they're born. So it's, what we did with our agency is that we put together like almost like a binder with pictures and information about us, and we went through a process, Trevante, where we said, okay, we're fine with, initially we did not say that we were okay with an African American baby, because Grace is Caucasian, African American, Latino, and Japanese, like in her makeup. And we had originally said we were fine with everything but, in terms of race, everything but African American, and not because we as a couple were racist, but my father is from Texas in the 1930s and my father-in-law is from Tennessee in the 40s, and they just grew up in kind of a different mindset racially.
Old school racist, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, when we had the opportunity of Kamaya, the little girl we were going to adopt for Grace, with her being African-American, because it's at, like, about 2 weeks before we got placed with Kamaya, we switched, and we said we were open to all races, you know, nationalities and stuff like that. And you also go through a process of, okay, we're fine if the birth mother has, you know, mental or physical disabilities in her family history. We're fine if she drank or, you know, smoked. It's like when we picked up Grace, the doctors, and it was funny because a sorority sister of my wife's actually delivered Grace. She was the OBGYN on call when Grace was born. So we got a little bit more information about Grace than normally you would have in the domestic adoption process, but like the doctor told us, like it would have been worse if her birth mother smoked than did cocaine. I mean, just in terms of like what it affects the brain and the lungs and developmentally and stuff like that. But so with domestic, you get you basically get picked by a birth mother, or you get paired up by your agency with a birth family or mother. Usually it's single women. Very rarely is it, you know, a man and woman that are going to have a child, and they know that they're not going to be able to take care of it, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So, you know, it would be different on the international stage, because international adoptions, it's kids that are already in orphanages. They're already, you know, parental rights have been terminated. They're already eligible for adoption. With domestic, it's a little trickier, because you kind of have to be picked, depending on the agency that you go with. I mean, you can do a private adoption, like completely private, where, you know, you can arrange through an attorney with a birth mother, okay, you're pregnant, we're going to take custody of this child when it's born. And that's a different path, and we didn't go down that route just because it's a lot more expensive.
Right.
I mean, in all honesty.
One thing, I don't know why I'm keep being hung up on this, but, I mean, your wife holding Grace for the first time was like the lock-in, right?
Yeah. Why? I mean, it was for her. For me, it was when I saw her picture. So.
Okay. Why didn't she want to go with you?
Because she wanted to grieve. She wanted to be sad for our daughter at the time, Kamaya. She wanted to feel the loss of that child. And, I mean, you got to understand something, Jordan. In the same phone call that we were told, this is not your daughter, we have somebody else. We have another child for you. And so flipping those switches, it's not that I was better than Elizabeth at it. It's just that I had a connection with Kamaya. I held her in my hands. I have pictures of her in my arms. She was a beautiful child, and I would have loved her as much as I love Grace, or my other daughter, Molly, or my two sons, Charlie and Henry. But she wasn't my daughter. Right. And when I saw the picture of Grace and I heard the story, like, no, this is who I'm supposed to father. This is who I'm supposed to have as my daughter.
That's pretty neat.
So,
very. Yeah. I mean, oof. Okay. Let me just say to you and to anybody listening, because I mean, my podcast is whatever. You know, I try my hardest. I did a lot of prep work for this one to not sound like a total moron. But I mean, this is so far above like anything that I most likely will ever have to deal with, you know? And I just think it's really cool. So don't, you know, if I'm sitting here going like, wow, cool. Like I'm having like a, you know, like Jay would say, like a Keanu Reeves moment where yeah. I'm just sitting here going like, holy shit. Like there's in my life right this second, there's no phone call that all that stuff would happen. You know what I mean? All those emotions, all those.
Well, I mean, you know, it's Trevante. I mean, I've had years that I went through this. I mean, it took us close to a year to get Grace, and then it took us close to 2 years to get Molly and Charlie. So, I mean, I've had the time to process it, and I mean, I can speak about it not flippantly, but I've processed it emotionally, and it's kind of like just dropping a sledgehammer on you. And I understand your reaction. It's just like anybody else who has heard the story. You know, they need time to kind of let it wash over.
Well, no, it's not even that, because I'm with you all of a sudden. Like, you know, we just became friends on Facebook, and we've been friends on Twitter for a while, whatever. But now I'm in. You understand? But still,
yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen it, but like I'm Dexter. Like I'm staring over the table or across the table at you going like, man, I wonder what that's like. I'll never know, you know. not to say that I'll never know, but I mean right this second, like I can't even a little bit latch on to what you're talking about on the real emotional level. So that's why this is really fascinating to me. What happened with the dads? Because you have black kids now. Like where are the dads? Dads, the racist dads.
Yeah, the birth father
yours and the father-in-law.
Oh, no, where my dad and my father-in-law, they love, well, I'll say this simply, they love their black grandbabies, because they now have three.
Nice.
We were down in Charlotte, North Carolina, where my parents lived about 3 years ago, and Grace was, she'll be five this October. She was about, I don't know if she had turned two yet, but my dad pulled me aside and said, you know, I ran into somebody that marched with Dr. King, and I, you know, he was talking to me about something, and my dad told me that he said, well, you've known me for many years. Would you imagine that I would have a black granddaughter? Because I do. And the guy was just like, wow, you're from Dallas, Texas, you know, in the 30s and 40s. You lived in Alabama. I mean, I remember watching football games growing up as a kid, hearing my dad scream the N-word. I mean, I do. And, you know, it just, it totally kind of changed his heart. And my father-in-law was a little easier to change just because he really latched on to the fact that we were helping a child in need. And so they're both completely 1,000%, you know, on board behind us, whatever you want to call it. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Is there any other, like, I do want to hear about the international process a little bit too, but like, I have a lot of content that I kind of want to throw at you from Twitter and Facebook. We're getting some pretty good traction right now with Twitter. Our homies are pretty sweet, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, they just, because I travel a lot, so I'm gone like one or two nights a week, and just, you know, I'll be sitting at a bar at a restaurant because I'm not going to take up a table, and I'll just throw something up on Twitter and just, you know, like the Moriers and the Twitter Hatcher Club and those people, and I mean even people beyond that I've met just electronically. I mean, I don't know if you and I will ever shake hands physically, but
hey man, I want to make it happen. I mean, you know,
yeah. So I mean, I've got a guest bedroom in Richmond, so anytime.
Hell yeah, I'll come out there for a Lamb of God show or something like that. you know what? Before we get to that, let's kind of put a bow on it with the social media stuff. Tell me a little bit about the international process, and like, did you run into anything like besides the normal? Like, I mean, I know there's a lot of red tape, a lot of hoops, but like, was there any other like kind of glaring story that you wanted to throw out there for us?
Well, it's kind of funny, Trevante, because the hurdles that we ran into domestically with losing an adoption and then getting placed almost immediately in another one, almost the same thing happened to us internationally. We had two kids, Henry and Grace, and we're fine with that. And we were speaking at an adoption conference, and in the table next to me was this couple that had just brought a little boy back from China. It's just so sweet. He's maybe a year and a half old, had like little glasses on. It was just adorable. Yeah. I mean, you just eat him up. And, you know, I told Elizabeth at lunch that day, I was like, hey, why don't we adopt a baby from China? And, you know, we'd had friends that had done it. And so we started looking into that process, and we really were called to adopt a child with special needs because they are very hard to place. Cerebral palsy, physical deformities, they're very hard to place in adoption internationally and domestically. So we were actually paired with a little boy in China who I think at the time was about 8 months old, and it was about 2 or 3 months before we were going to travel to Beijing and then one of the outlying provinces to pick this little boy up. The Chinese government said no because they had a problem with the fact that I was a former drug addict, because I had disclosed that in the process and the paperwork and all that stuff.
Now, you know what? Elizabeth, I forgot to ask you this. Did you ever run into anything legal with that, or did you skate and then get clean?
Yeah, I mean, in myself with drugs. I mean,
yeah. Like, did you ever get arrested or any of that shit?
No. I never. There's nothing on my permanent record about me ever possessing or distributing or
okay.
Flying to Europe and smuggling stuff back. You know. When you fly under a fake Canadian passport, you pretty much get away with murder. But that's another podcast.
Yeah, indeed. You just booked your second show.
Yeah, repeat offenders. Mm-hmm. We got to that point. It was like 2 or 3 months before we were supposed to travel, and it was disclosed. I disclosed it on my information, and Elizabeth had been prescribed some post-pardon stuff for after Henry was born. She was on it for like a week and a half, not even 2 weeks. Well, China, being the world's largest exporter of opium, had a problem with that, and so they refused us. And we, immediately were like, okay, well, what do we do? And the agent said, there's always Africa. So we started looking at that. We looked at Congo. And we're like, okay, let's adopt the child from Congo. And doing more research about Congo, it's so poor. It should be like the wealthiest nation in the world because they have all the gold and minerals and all this stuff. But there's all this civil war that's been going on for hundreds of years. So Elizabeth and I decided that if we're going to adopt from Congo, we're going to get 2 children. And it's going to be a sibling group. But Molly and Charlie are biologically brother and sister.
Oh, cool.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult, Gervonta, to keep brothers and sisters or sibling groups together in international adoptions because people want a girl or a boy or, 2 boys but not a girl. Or,
right.
2 girls, not a, what are the combination of? But it was, I say it's funny. It wasn't funny at the time, but we were paired with another sibling group, a little boy named Colombo and his sister, Nisea. And we were in that process, and we were about 3 months, two or three months again from traveling, and his uncle or their uncle would not sign away his rights. He was their guardian because he wanted like $10,000. Cat.
Jesus.
And our agency does not advocate that because that's basically child trafficking. And so we had to walk away from that. But like 48 hours later, we got a call about Shadrach and Ange, who are Charlie and Molly. And we saw their pictures and we read their story. They're the youngest of 5. Their father died. Their mother put them up for adoption along with their other 3 siblings. When Charlie was maybe 2 and a half, he'll be 5 in December. And then Molly was just a baby because she'll turn 3 in June. So she was a baby. And we just fell in love with these 2 kids. So we figured out that we could adopt them and we went through that process. And we traveled over to Congo, and we were there for about 2 weeks. And then we came back to the United States with Charlie and Molly. And I think I tweeted this up when we were on the trip, but we literally were on the tarmac of the runway of the airport in Kinshasa, Congo, which is the capital, and the security guy or whatever was looking through our bags one more time before we got on the plane. Like, literally the plane's next to us, and he says, "I see you're adopting," because we're 2 Caucasian Americans with these 2 African children, and he said, "Thank you for adopting. Our kids are dying. Go to America and be happy." And literally, I got to the top of the, because we had been on pins and needles like for 2 weeks, because you got to wait for an exit letter, and sometimes you get it in 2 days, sometimes it takes 3 weeks, and we had budgeted for a trip, I think a total trip of 3 weeks, but it was just like, it was coming up on, like our flight was leaving Saturday, we got the exit letter Friday at like noon, So we were fried, we were frazzled. We had these two new kids. We have two kids in the United States that we hadn't seen for 2 weeks. And I barely got to the top of the stairs, Trevante, before I just burst out crying. And the stewardess on Belgian Air was very, very sweet. And she said, "Let me show you to your seats." And so I, you know, missy. And, you know, we got there, and like 30 hours later, we land in Richmond, and there's probably about 250 people at the airport waiting for us, along with our kids. People that were either adopting or had adopted or just had a heart for adoption. But we landed, we took off Saturday, we landed basically Sunday night, and Monday morning, the Congolese government closed all international adoptions. So we literally were on the second to last flight out of Congo with internationally adopted children. And so we, like, last helicopter out of Saigon, that we were on.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's awesome and crazy kind of looking back on it, because I don't know, and I've told Elizabeth this, Trevante, like, I don't know if I could have waited longer, because if we had missed that window, we would have traveled back to the United States without Charlie and Molly. They would have gone back to the orphanage, and it probably would still, they'd probably still be there, because it's probably going to be about a year before they open it back up again.
Jeez.
And I don't know if I could have, like, waited that long.
Right.
So
that's nuts. Did we cover the actual, like, processes and all that kind of stuff, like the stories?
Yeah. I mean, it's just because the adopting from Congo, you can, I mean, like, legally the kids were ours, like, last February, but we didn't travel over to Congo until we knew we could bring them home. So, you know, we kind of delayed the front end to make it quicker on the back end. So, but yeah, I think, I don't know of anything else we can talk about
okay.
in terms of the process.
Okay. So. Well, perfect. Let's do some social media stuff. Just since we've been on, we did, you know, both post a tweet that we were doing this. You've probably seen a couple of these, but first of all, let's go with, and, you know, I don't, unless you got some story that's crazy, like, if you can just kind of pound it out quickly, because there's a lot, and I don't want to keep you too long, you know.
Not a problem.
Lupe first, Loop D Lou at Loop D Lou. What has been the biggest adjustment going from 2 to 4 kids overnight? And do you think you'll ever adopt again?
I'll take the second part first. Our family is complete. We are done adopting. There is talk of maybe after the kids are all in, like, regular, like, elementary and middle school, our agency does the interim care, where, like, friends of ours in Richmond, they take care of babies for, like, a week or two until they're placed with their adoptive family. So we might, and I say might, do that. But that's a good 5 or 10 years down the road. But no, in terms of, like, officially adopting children, we are done. Because right now, like, financially, only 2 of them can go to college. So I have to, I'm not going to do, like, a Hunger Games kind of thing, but it's going to be, like, you know, there's going to be, like, a competition, Trevante, like, okay, who wants college education the most? Because all 4 of you kids ain't going.
You know what? I'm going to go with, by the time they're old enough to go to college, it'll be antiquated and obsolete, and Google will run our lives, and we'll be getting drone strikes every other day.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it might be something. But, I mean, in terms of the adjustment, it wasn't really an adjustment of, okay, now we have twice as many kids. It was more the adjustment of, I can't parent these 2 children like I've parented my other 2. I can't threaten to say, okay, well, if you don't want to get in the car and go to the restaurant, you can just stay home. Because with adopted children, not necessarily Grace, because she was adopted as a baby, but with Charlie being older, It was, you can't really threaten abandonment because they've already been abandoned. So
Jesus.
They'll just freak out. Ooh. Yeah. So, you know, we just had to recognize that, like, sometimes, and I think I tweeted about this, sometimes Charlie more than Molly, because Molly's so little, but sometimes Charlie will just get, like, this Vietnam stare where it's like, okay, that kid's seen some shit, and I can't begin to understand it, but all I can do is say, you are home, you are loved, you are part of a family, and I understand that you're upset that Grace went to get Sweet Frog, and you didn't, and, you know, frozen yogurt is a treat. I mean, like, every meal Charlie refers to as lunch, because when he was in the orphanage, all they got was lunch. Like, they got, like, a little snack in the morning and a little snack at night, but, like we'll be sitting down for dinner, and he'll be like, what are we having for lunch? I said, well, we had ham sandwiches for lunch. We're having, you know, jambalaya for dinner. This is dinner. You had lunch, and tomorrow morning you'll have breakfast like you have had. So it's not really an adjustment of numbers. It's an adjustment of parenting style, I think would be the best way to answer that question. But to the second point, again, to reemphasize it, we are done.
That's funny. That's a... there is no better way to answer that. Let's go to... Oh. To bookend that, Lupe quickly, 2 seconds later, said, and also, TJ, your avatar on Twitter is creepy. Seconded by French Fry Phil. People, my Twitter avi right now is I had my friend Maddie Buchanan over here, who is a crazy artist and is really good with face paint. She made me kind of look like the Joker, so I threw that up there again.
I think it looks great.
I think it's cool, too. I don't know, whatever. let's keep going here. Brad Hutchings, are you going to represent your beautiful family, fine state, and your great school in the TMV's Cop Monkey Bear tournament?
Honestly, I cannot answer that without speaking first to my legal team and to the trainers that I have in place for the 2016 Rio Games, because I don't want that to sidetrack any of my failing training that I'm currently doing for Rio 2016. So I don't know
let me just put a hand on your chest and be like, you posted a picture saying I'm the fat one on the right, so let's just relax. All right.
Yeah. Well, you know, Trevante, sailing teams need they need ballast, and I'm offering my services really to any country.
You know what?
I mean, I'm not.
You're right. You might be the Prince Fielder of the tournament. Who knows?
Yeah, well, because, you know, I mean, the good thing is that Charlie and Molly, when we get their U.S. citizenship in a few months, they will actually still be Congolese citizens because they'll have dual citizenship. So they can, in the future, represent the DRC in the Olympics. So
that'd be
a nice shot of them walking in the stadium. And here are Charlie and Molly's parents, whiter than the whitest white people, in the stands. Representing, so
that's awesome.
But yeah, I don't know when that tournament is. I need to check again, obviously first with my legal team.
Sure.
So
no questions here, but we got 12 saying hello, my handsome warriors, two of my favorite men.
That's all it.
Bethun, what is this? Beth, I'm going with that. I don't know how you say your name. She hates my Abby too. What else do we got here? I'm going to piggyback on 12's tweet here, the serious question, because that's kind of where I was headed with the Facebook stuff. She says, what do you think the biggest struggle will be as they get older? My slant, and it's not any different really, but like, I mean, you have a mixed race family in a very racist world right now. Like, do you think that we're going to evolve past this, you know, 15-yard penalty bullshit to where maybe they won't have to worry about it anymore? Like, what do you think is going to happen with that?
I honestly, Trevante, when people ask me that, because I do have a very, I'll just say, a very Benetton family, because I mean, we're basically a Benetton ad. And when we had first adopted Grace, let's see, we got her, she was born in October, we got her beginning of November. That following summer, we went down to, we've got a beach place in South Carolina, south of Myrtle Beach, and I told my wife Elizabeth, I said, look, I went to school down here, I know how these people think. If anybody says anything to you, me, Henry, and our chocolate baby Grace, because she does favor her African-American heritage more than anything else.
Sure.
Let me do the talking. Let me deal with it. Let me handle it. Don't get it. Because Elizabeth, for a long time, had this chip on her shoulder of, say something, I dare you, about my black baby. Because she just did. I mean, because she's a mama bear. I mean, mama bears, you know, claws come out.
Yeah.
But two families actually came up to us on the beach who were also, what I would say, you know, obvious families, or, you know, not conspicuous families, but just, you know, there's obvious adoption or something going on where one of these things is not like the other.
Sure.
And they just said, oh, where is she from? She's beautiful. And did it, and that really just diffused any tension during that process. When we got Charlie and Molly, I mean, you know, we, again, look very diverse. I mean, I'm basically the only person in my family that has blue eyes. Everybody else has brown eyes. Three of them have brown skin. You know, two of them have, you know, Indian heritage from my wife's side. But Henry's going to be very tall because of my Swedish genes. So I just think that if people, and this has happened to me in restaurants and bars and stuff, people have started using the N-word, and I would just show them a picture of my family, Trevante. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to take away your freedom of speech, but I'm also not going to give you the power over me to not defend my family. So this is my family. I love them all very much. And if you had told me 5 years ago, 10 years ago, hell, 20 years ago, if I would have had a family like this, I would be like, you're crazy, you're high. I mean, there's no way with my father, just the way I was brought up, no, it's not going to happen. So I just think that all I can do is take care of my family and hope that, and I'm not saying I'm better than anybody because I have a transracial family, I'm just saying that I understand race a little bit more. Plus, I understand white privilege a little bit more because I'm juxtaposing how I was raised to the fact that Molly and Charlie's parents basically gave them up. So right. I have to, you know, I have to reach out to them with my heart and say, look, what you're saying is wrong, and I don't agree with this, but I'm not, I can't change your heart. And like when we adopted Grace, I told my dad and my father-in-law, I'm letting you know that you could have a black grandchild. Because at that point we didn't know. But I'm just giving you a heads up, not to get your permission, but to just give you that courtesy of, you can have a black grandbaby. So you deal with it on your own. Because I can't change your heart. And you know, I stick by that. So.
Good, very good answer. I mean, it is so weird. Like, I mean, I've talked about this on the podcast. Unless you listen to a lot of them, you probably don't know I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. So like, you know, like tolerance of race was definitely there. Cause like, if you look at any literature, it's always, like you said, Benetton, you know, mixed kind of stuff. But there's not really been, I've been away from the congregation for a long time, and I don't know if they've changed their stance toward like homosexuality or anything like that, but it is weird that, you know, I'm relatively young, and I feel like I'm on the bubble of like, you know, people just ahead of me are probably going to have problems with all this shit, race, you know, sexuality, all that kind of stuff. People behind me, they don't see any of it. In fact, they're grouping together, they're having a good time. It's just bizarre that, you know, we're still living in a world where, and I can't even believe, you know, not to bring the, you know, Jay into this whole thing, but like just the news of like the you know, the new penalty that they're trying to have for, you know, saying nigger on the football field. I mean, it's insane that we're even having this conversation. Like, there's so much. There are people in the Congo. There are kids in the Congo that need to be adopted, and we're talking about a word. What the fuck?
Right. Well, and that's. I think that goes to. I saw 12's tweet about, you know, when they get older, and, you know, like, race is the product of actually a sexual assault. So we've got that thrown in on top of the, you know, on top of the drug addiction and the HIV, which, you know, again, she says the negative, but we were very hesitant to even talk about the HIV for like 6 months because there's a stigma. And I mean, it's not just the homosexual community.
People will kiss somebody with herpes before they'll touch, like, shake hands with somebody with HIV, you know?
Correct. And I've seen many...
Believe me, I know.
Both straight and gay. I mean, I've seen the ravages of HIV up close, personal, like, feeding ice chips to a friend of mine as he's dying. Jesus. And it wasn't because he did something, you know, illicit, illegal, or immoral. It just happened. And so you just have to deal with it. And so to 12's point, when they get older, I'm going to have to, you know, not deal with, but I'm going to have to explain to Grace, well, we don't know much about your birth dad. He hurt your birth mother. But out of that terrible, terrible occurrence, we have you. And that's what I'm going to focus on. And I'm going to focus on the positive with my children. I mean, I was throwing the baseball with Henry and Charlie, and I mean, Charlie's just, he's ripping it. I mean, he's just so naturally athletic, and Henry's really not. So it's just like one of those things where, you know, I'm trying to work with Henry a little bit more, and I don't really need to work with Charlie very much. He's just so naturally athletic, and I don't know if it's because he's Congolese or he just has this survival mentality, but... You know, I will just deal with those things as they come. So.
Is this your Jimmy the Greek moment? We're not really sure. He's got he's got a 36-inch vertical leap already. He might have that quick twitch.
Well, I mean, honestly, I'm looking forward to if Grace or Charlie or Molly are in the Olympics. Just the screenshot of Elizabeth and I, and probably Henry sitting there, like, "Yep."
I'm gonna swing back around to that. So let me have that one, okay? Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So I think I just did tweets today. Facebook, I've been doing all week, and I'm gonna try to, you know, funnel this down into something, you know, palatable here. Yesterday, I really caused a shitstorm because I wanted to make it simple enough where people would actually involve themselves, but I don't think I worded it completely right. And I know you answered on it today. I went to Facebook and I said, should there be a quote test that would qualify people to have children. Now, let me say this too. Like, you know, when I'm fishing for information on Facebook, like, I've said that. I don't know that everybody on my Facebook has seen, you know, the post where I said, like, if I ask a question here, it's not because I want to know, you know, like, socially who's around me. Like, I'm using it for the show. It's something that I don't know exactly what I'm talking about. I know zero about adoption, very little about kids. I need your help, you know? So, you know, for the most part, these people know that, but this one definitely was very strange. Easily my broadest post, we got 51 likes and 84 comments on this thing. Now, in my world, that's crazy. Now, of course, I'm peppered in there, so let's call it maybe 70 comments. And I'm not going to go into the whole thing, like, read all these off, because, I mean, what I learned is probably the majority of people that commented and liked are people that said yes that don't have kids, meaning, you know, they're just some ham and egger running around, you know, trying to buy, some, like, one quick thing at the store, and they get annoyed by a crying child, or an exhausted mom.
I used to get annoyed, and I would say... I mean, like I said in my comment, I was the best parent before I had a kid. Because my child would never go to Walmart with, like, shit on his shirt and boogers and, you know, just his diaper showing and, you know, his hair all whatever. And, you know, three different kinds of shoes on, and, you know, wearing, you know, cowboy boots in 95 degree weather with a cape and, you know, a tri-corner hat, which my children had done. I mean, it's just, you know, that's the shit that you don't think about.
Sloan does not allow this. I'm trying to get a Gerber ad.
this is not in the Phillips household. What are you talking about? Dude, go put your tuxedo t-shirt on and get your slippers. I mean, you know, it just, I mean, I remember we were at Christmas or Thanksgiving down at my in-laws, and my sister-in-law has 8 kids, and my brother-in-law has 4 kids, and then I've got a bunch of nieces and nephews on my side of the family. And we were going, my wife and I were going out to a movie, and she comes stomping downstairs and says, somebody's kid drew on the walls with a magic marker. Sloan and I are going to a movie. And she was very, like righteous, and, you know, I was like, you know they're going to totally mess with us when we have kids. And she said, oh, no, our children would never do that. And 2 weeks ago, in our living room at our house, there's marker on the wall. I'm like, bam. Right here. This is like Jesus and karma combined. Like,
you did this.
Hey, you did this. You did this 8 years ago in December in Greensboro, North Carolina. So, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's a question. It was a great question, Tremonti. I will commend you for throwing the gasoline into, you know, the fire.
Oh, I'm that guy for sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you put yourself out there like that, you're like, look, I want honest answers, and...
Oh, no, hang on, let me stop you. The other thing, too, like, I threw probably 4 or 5 different questions. Like, 15 people thought I was having a child. Like, are you going to be a dad? I'm like, no, stupid, like, it's all... I would come out and say I'm going to be a dad. I'm not going to, you know, lure you guys into some bullshit, you know, just to see what kind of psychos I have as friends, you know? It was fucking...
Yeah, I don't have to change a diaper yet, but if I was going to, what advice would you give?
Asking for a friend tag, you know?
Well, yeah, no, this isn't for me. No, maybe it's my roommate's cage. I mean, seriously, it's just like, no, this isn't me, you know? You know, to bring it full circle back to Jay, it's like, this isn't me. Don't judge me based on what I'm about to say, because it's not for me. It's for a friend of mine. It's for a buddy of mine. It's a guy that's dead. I mean, whatever. When you put yourself out there, which you did, and I commend you for it, because you said something a day or two ago about adoption, and a lot of people jumped on that.
Yeah, that was the other thing. How many people came out saying that, you know, they were adopted? Like, I'd have to look back through it and see, but it seemed like very few were, like, agency or, you know, domestic type of thing. It seemed like, you know, single parent, and then... you know, whoever they got with had the decency to actually go through the process and become their dad or whatever. I do want to read a couple of these just because, I mean, some of these are pretty heavy, and I don't necessarily need you to comment on them, but I do have a couple that I will ask you what you think. I could freaking find it. Where are you at? Hello. There we go. This is my buddy Jeremy. I'm not going to say his name on the show because I didn't ask his permission necessarily to read this, but he got the biggest traction from his comment, and I've known this guy since we were, you know, 6, and I had no idea that he's going through stuff like this. So again, you know, should there be a test that qualifies you to have a child? He answers, there could never be an accurate test. Bad people can change the second they look into their child's eyes. That one moment can change a person for a lifetime, and good parents can change overnight when one dramatic event happens to them. I have lived this firsthand. I was the fuck up that changed and am a damn good father to my kids. Sorry, I can't read. While their mother, on the other hand, was good at first and then left us all for the party life. Parenting is a learning experience for parents and kids. My grandmother always said that you will learn more from your kids than your kids will ever learn from you. Pretty huge. And like this guy, I haven't seen him in a lot of years, and his comment completely blew my mind. And I think he's totally right. What was the other one that really got to me? A lot of stuff, like a lot of the people were talking about, you know, what's the test going to be? Is it going to be like financial status, or is it like a psych evaluation? And obviously, you know, this is a really child question where, you know, you can't ever have a test, you know, 'cause then like if you fail, then what else can't you have? It's just the same as like owning a gun, like having a psych evaluation before you can apply to have a concealed carry permit. You know, if you fail, then what does that mean? You can't work at Lowe's now? So
yeah.
I understand the rabbit hole, you know. Let me see. There's two more kind of long ones. And sorry, man. Like I said, I don't need you to comment on these, but I thought they were pretty amazing. Valerie comes in. And wait a minute, not Valerie. Excuse me. Shauna. She says, you know, what would all the tests be screening for? Finances, parenting skills? I have three children. I'm not quite sure that a test would have done any good because of the continuous evolution of life changes. Great point. Valerie comes in, and after a couple of messages, I had this highlighted and it just went away. Damn it. You know what? No, I had it highlighted because it was so brutal. She basically she made a couple of really good points and then attacked everybody that was, you know, non-childbearing and all that kind of stuff. So it was interesting. Yeah, there's so many I can't even go at it, but I'll leave the rest alone. Sorry about that.
No, it's all right.
Couple last questions. What's your biggest, I mean, obviously the biggest challenges and, what you're worried about and all that kind of stuff, but, what, I don't even know how to ask this because it's so silly, but, you have four kids from, you know, they're all going to be very different, even though you got twins,
yeah.
or excuse me, brother and sister over here. I mean, all of them are going to be very different. What are you, most concerned about, becoming an issue when they get older? We already went into race. Do you think there's going to be anything else? Really?
Yeah. I just, you know, I think that because my brother and I would say, jokingly or to hurt each other, well, you know, you're adopted, or mom and dad didn't want you, you're a mistake, or da da da. I mean, that's just what siblings do. But I think that with the dynamic of so much adoption being prevalent in our family, I don't want that to be used as a device to hurt another child. Either Henry says something or the adopted kid says something. Another concern I have is I want each of them to feel the way I feel about them, and that they are the most important. And I'm not talking about playing favorites. I'm just saying I want them to know how much I love them every single day, how much I miss them when I go out of town, how much I miss them, you know, when they're upstairs asleep and we're downstairs watching television. I mean, I love being around them. They're funny. They're tragic. They're just these microcosms of the world. And you're right. They're very, very different. But, you know, we have the bookends being Henry and Molly, and then we have what we call the Weasley twins, which is Grace and Charlie, because they're about 2 or 3 months apart, and their personalities are, you know, Henry's very protective, and Molly clings to him a lot, and Grace and Charlie, I mean, they get into mischief. They're our Weasley twins, and, you know, I just want all four of them to know that we love them equally, and I really never want them to try, and they, it's kind of a long-winded answer, but it's not that they would mean to hurt each other permanently by saying, oh, well, you know, your real parents gave you up and just threw you aside. And so it would just be to hurt in the moment. But that means something more than when my brother and I, who are biological, you know, would say it to us, to each other, jokingly and to hurt each other. But, I mean, there's some serious ammunition there in our family. And I don't want that to ever, you know, be used, I guess.
Sure. One last question, a little fun one to end it all. You mentioned the brother and sister, Charlie and Molly, being in the Olympics. What events do you put them in?
Molly has the body frame, just like her sister Grace, to be in the gymnastic arena. I think Charlie could go any kind of track and field. He's very tall and lanky. So any kind of pole vaulting, you know, high jump, thing like that, or, I mean, all of them, including Henry, you know, could do like Curly, because that doesn't really seem to be, you know, based on racial lines, just depending on what you're comfortable wearing in terms of apparel, which, you know, I am looking for some of those curling outfits myself presently online. So, but no, I would just, whatever they excel at, but Grace is already in like the super advanced gymnastics at her gym, you know, whatever. And Charlie is now, he's been in the country less than 6 months and he's with her in the same class. Cause I mean, the kid's just, he climbs and he swings and he jumps and he runs. I mean, he's just a natural athlete, and I think he's become that, Trevante, because he's had to survive. Like, literally, he had to be fast to avoid getting shot, and he had to be fast to get food. And so when you see that as the necessity or the driving factor behind it, yeah. I mean, the kid's got fire in him, which I love.
That got a little heavy, but I'm going to do this anyway. The Phillips Curling Family, absolute amazing tale. A cat dressed in family skin. Why'd you have to bring up the getting shot part? Damn it. You ruined everything. I had a lot more to go on it, and now I feel like a dick.
Well, Trevante, when you go to a country and you hand somebody through bars your U.S. federally issued passport, and they give you a little piece of paper, and they say, okay, when we get your exit letter, you get this back. I'm like, okay, so that's it? You're going to take my United States passport and just put it in a drawer, which is basically what they did. I mean, the juxtaposition of that in Congo is these people and their spirit and their hope and their dreams. And I mean, they're selling everything from water to sunglasses and shoes to combs. I mean, just everything in between. And they love it. And they love Congo. And we want to go back in like 10 years. And I talked to Charlie about it. He's just like, well, so will we go back to stay? And he kind of got fear in his voice. I said, no, we will go back to visit. Your home is always going to be America. He said, okay. So it's just, that's what I want to instill. And I mean, we don't know a lot about Charlie and Molly's upbringing just because the information and records keeping in third or fourth world countries is not that great. But I mean, I was at the airport and those guys with guns shoving people because they're not standing in the right line. And so, I mean, there was fighting in Kinshasa where we were about 2 months after we left. And like people at the same hotel where we were staying that were there then were Facebooking us and texting us saying, we can hear the gunshots. It's that close. So it wasn't, people were like, well, why did you, you know, adopt kids from Africa or Congo or whatever? You know, what about this adoption? I said, this is not an adoption. This is a rescue mission. Like, we are rescuing two kids. And yeah, we may not give them the greatest life, but we're giving them a chance at a better life. And so, that's what we got.
Well, if you're ever in Colorado on business, you know, give me a holler, and we'll bone up on your AK-47 skills. man, it's a crazy story, and I mean, you fielded everything that I could come up with. I mean, I learned a lot. And I appreciate that. I told you, you know, we were messaging back and forth, and I was like, you know, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to try to prep nice, but I know that this is going to be me, you know, getting a crash course. And I commend you. I commend your wife. Hope your kids become athletes. That way maybe you won't have to pay for any college. You know, how great would that be? I appreciate you doing this, man. Do you have anything besides, like, you know, obviously advocating for adoption, all that kind of stuff. Do you have anything to plug besides the Twitter or like anything like that?
No, just, I mean, if this conversation between you and I causes one person listening to consider adoption, then that's all. I would plug, and I'm not like a big pro-lifer. I'm really not. I just think that if you can, as a woman, and I'm not a woman, but it just, I've met with enough birth mothers to know that it's a very difficult decision to give up a child for adoption. I understand that there's loss, and there's pain and there's regret and there's, you know, feelings of, you know, just being ashamed and all that stuff. But the alternative is so much worse. And I just think that if one person hears this and says, you know what, honey, let's adopt. Let's look at the foster system. Let's look at international adoption. Let's look at domestic infant adoption. Let's look at foster to adopt. Let's look at just interim care. Let's look at whatever, just being involved with the adoption process. I mean, that's just, it's giving hope to those that maybe don't think that they have any. And that's what we did, and I will always advocate for that. So.
Perfect. So shallow after this conversation, but go from there.podbean.com is the home site. That's all I'll plug for now because we're going to post the heck out of this. I'm going to kill this, but hang on with me, okay?
Open doors so I walk inside. Close my eyes, find my place to hide. In the shake as I take.